This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It is 89.5 FM. And we're hoping to speak soon with Stephen Sahuni. And Stephen is with us. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes, I am.
Stephen, thanks very much. You are, of course, a Syrian American journalist, and you are the chief editor of MideastDiscourse.com. And
that's true.
And by the way, congratulations. This is a developing journal, right? I mean, this has come into being in the past year or so.
Yeah, it's been about 4 months. It's me and a few independent journalists trying to get out the truth from the Middle East to the world in English, of course. And they have a section of Arabic, but our concentration right now is on the Middle East and in English, particularly.
Well, we're really glad of its existence. I hope our listeners will follow that, because, in fact, it is very hard, despite the fact that this is sometimes thought of as the information center of the world, the Western world, that prides itself that it says on top of world news. But, in fact, they don't actually cover the kinds of issues that you do and in the way that you do. And today you have a story that I'm learning of just before I came down here today. The Italian news agency, I think it's called Rai News, they did an interview, and you correct me if I get this wrong, but they did an interview with the president of Syria, Mr. Assad, but chose not to broadcast it. Is that right?
That's true. On November 26th, the Rai News TV, Italian, did an interview with President Assad in Damascus, and it was supposed to be published on the 2nd of December. Mm-hmm. Then they sent a letter and they said, we're going to postpone it. And they said, okay, but without giving any reasons, they just said for technical stuff. Then the second time, they said they're going to postpone it. In the end, the Syrian presidency, the office, and the media office said, okay, if they're not going to publish it, they're going to put it on all the Syrian media on Monday, December.
That today?
Yeah, Monday at 9 p.m. Damascus time, and that's what they did. And the interview was 25 minutes. And after we heard the interview in general, all of it, we knew why they did not want it on the Italian TV for many reasons. Number one, President Assad said that the European Union in general and France in particularly supported and funded and trained the terrorists and on the war on Syria from day one. And they had a big role in this, on the war. And it's their fault that all of these refugees are all over Europe. The Syrian refugees are in the millions all over Europe. It's because they're in their own hands, because they funded and supported these terrorists, and they trained them, and they gave them weapons. And we all saw in the past years the weapon storages for the terrorists, where they were made in Europe, made in Bulgaria, and made in other countries of the European Union. Also, the information came out several times in the past 10 years about how the Europeans they were funding. So that was one part we figured out, that they did not want that information to go out to the European people, and they did not want to go to show.
Yes.
The Syrian president in Syria is fighting terrorism, because the Western media, they want to show that in their mind, they want to show their people, the Europeans and the Americans, they want to show their people that the Syrian government is killing their people. That's the image that they want to show.
Yes.
But in reality, we all know that's not true. Mm-hmm. There's terrorists from all around the world. It's not like before. Today, the Syrian army and the Russians are progressing, but they are fighting terrorism, who the Europeans and the Americans and the Gulf countries, they're the one who started this war, and they're the one who destroyed Syria, and they're the one who made millions of refugees, Syrians to be refugees, and hundreds of thousands to be killed. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's, now, just, if I could just break you there, just to remind our listeners, this is Stephen Sahuni. He's a Syrian-American journalist. He's the chief editor of MideastDiscourse.com. Did the interviewer himself realize that he might have a problem with his editors and employers? Did he challenge the President Assad when on these assertions?
Actually, who did the interview was the CEO of the TV channel, and her name is Megan, something like that. The name, it's off my mind right now. But she's the one who made the interview with And she tried to ask him several questions, like, for example, about the Pope and the letter that the Pope sent to Syria, and when he's Pope asking the Syrian government to for the civilians of Idlib. And then the Prince Assad answered her, said, "We sent a letter to the Pope explaining the true situation, and because the Pope does not have the right information, it's not getting the right information of what's happening in Syria." And that's so also that was the second deal, like they did not want to show on their Italian TV, on that TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like the honesty and the truth that the West always asked for, the freedom of speech and truth. They did not want the truth out. They only want one side of the story and their side. They did not get what they wanted from the interview. So that's why they took the decision of not putting it on the air.
Yeah. This is really quite a, in a way, a scandal, isn't it? I mean, when a major broadcaster engages with a head of state to get an interview, that is negotiated rather carefully, and because there's, you know, you're talking about a representative, the head of the state, anything said is going to be of some note, and so it has to be understood that yes, you will do the interview, and yes, you will make it available in full. Surely that was the understanding. So, in other words, It suggests that Italy, as a part of NATO, and what I now call NATO, the prison house of nations, would have gotten a call from the more powerful people telling them, "You will not put that on your television."
That's true.
Would you think that's possible? Is that a good theory? I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist, but that sounds to me like what might have happened.
No, actually, it is the correct theory, because now we're seeing that the Syrian army and the Russians, they're progressing on the land. They're coming out. They're winning. The truce is coming out. Today, the Europeans and the Canadians and the Americans, they're not like how they used to be 9 years ago, or not even, sorry for using this word, naive. As they were before the 2003 and whatever CNN and BBC and Sky News tell them, oh, this like how they did in the Iraq war, and the people believed them. Today, the people, the Western people, they are smarter. They go, there's something called Google. They search for the information. They are not like how they used to be 15 years ago. They cannot fooled anymore.
Yes.
And that's why they did not want to show the truth of what's happening.
Yes, but they showed that they don't want to show. I mean, they really exposed themselves. It's like shooting yourself in the foot as a journalist.
That's true. They committed the suicide.
Yeah. Now, Stephen, I want to ask you this, and again, it's Stephen Sahuni, and he's the chief editor of MideastDiscourse.com. Please go to that site, check out all the writing there. But I was doing what you suggest people do, which is now you can do your own homework, and now you can get in touch with major journals, not only in your hometown, but around the world. Sharmeen Narwani has tweeted the fact that today Twitter took down President Assad's Twitter so that he couldn't post that Italian interview.
That's true.
That's a double whammy. I mean, how does Twitter decide that the president of Syria can't communicate?
Yeah, that happened actually just 1 hour ago. The Twitter company took down the official page of the Syrian presidency. This is not the first time that Twitter and the social media does this against not only Syria, against, let's call them, the anti-imperialism countries and nations. We all know that they did the same thing with Russia today on their YouTube channels, Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts. They did the same thing with Press TV on their Twitter account and on Facebook and on YouTube. If you put the picture of, let's say, sometimes the Syrian president or the head of the Lebanese resistance, Facebook takes down your account. Even if you mention his name, the names also Facebook takes you down. So this is not only the danger is not the military war. The danger today, it's becoming media war. You have from one side the Russia Today, Sputnik, and all the other good TV channels, radio stations, magazines, activists, in the face of huge empires, media empires like BBC, CNBC, Fox News, Sky News, all of them, in face of those of the other side. So this is what they're trying to do. And one side is using the social media to fight in the others. And that's what we're going through.
Yes, we have a situation where we're told that we're the free society and we're fighting against authoritarians, and we do it apparently as authoritarians with abandon. We make sure that there is no freedom. I mean, for example, we're talking about President Assad. Now, I assume they would say, well, what he says is propaganda, but if he's a head of state, that's what people will just want to know. What does the leader say? We understand that all political leaders can be judged according to people's prejudices, but he happens to be the head of state. And you say, well, you can't hear him because we consider it propaganda. That's madness. We're really I don't even think from their point of view it's very smart. It strikes me that people actually really do reserve the right to make up their own mind and to listen to whoever they want to listen to in order to do that. And so to have these minders who are standing behind them saying, no, we're going to turn that off now. We don't want you to hear that because you're a poor little lame child, you know. This is going to offend a lot of people. I'm, you know, taking the Italian national broadcaster, a major broadcaster, can't even run an interview in which they negotiated to do because they're members of NATO. That is a scandal. No wonder the Western states are pulling apart.
And what they should have done, show all sides, show all stories, and the people sitting at home, they choose either they want to continue to listen to this or they're not. They will think when they hear it and think about it in their mind, either I want to continue to hear in this channel or I'll flip it. But they don't want to do that. Like, they helped us by doing this. The Twitter company and the Rai TV station, they helped Syria and they helped the Syrian cause, and they were showing the world that, look, Syria is being under a not only a military war by the terrorists, but also a media war, and they're trying to they're abandoning us from carrying the truth out.
Mm-hmm. This is Stephen Sahuni. He is a Syrian-American journalist, chief editor of MideastDiscourse.com. You have a major issue in northern Syria, and there are so many angles to talk about it. That is the incursion, and there's an agreement that I want to ask you about. Is it called the Astana Agreement, the one in which Iran, Turkey, and Russia, I think with the major partners, maybe there was another, but they were to coordinate the reduction of violence in Syria and to withdraw all foreign fighters, those who were not illegally in the country, and of course starting with the United States. But is the Astana agreement still in place? Are they still talking? And is Turkey participating in good faith? Because the army is definitely there in northern Syria. They say for one purpose, that's to remove armed terrorists who wish to overthrow the or cause armed conflict inside Turkey. And that's, they say, their only purpose. Anyway, what about the Astana agreement? Is it in place, and do you think it will eventually come to fruition?
First of all, this meeting, the Astana meeting and the Astana agreement, the only side that's breaking it and not letting it to go through is the Americans. The Turkish, they cannot, as I said in previous articles and interviews, that they cannot backstab Russia today. They need Russia because today they are on the blacklist of the United States. So they're not going to stab the Russians in the back at all. So the only reason this standing in a meeting is not working and the war in Syria is taking longer, it should be have finished long time ago, but it's the American administrations and the Americans being in the east of Syria. What happened about in northeast Syria and especially in the north of Syria, about a week ago, the Syrian Air Force, and this is information came from Sana'a, Syrian news agency, officially, the Syrian Air Force bombed several oil tankers that were oil that's being smuggled from Syrian oil from the Kurdish area to the Turkish. Mm-hmm. The Kurdish Turkish, that they're fighting and they hate each other, but they're buying oil from each other.
Doing business and hating each other.
Yeah, and that's not the first time. The last 9 years, the Turkish, they bought oil from the Kurdish, they bought oil from the ISIS, they were working, like it's a business, all of them, and especially in Turkey, who's in charge of that is Erdogan's son, Bilal Erdogan. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that in the south of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So the Syrian Air Force bombed the tankers, bombed the oil fields to prevent, and they said, any kind of oil smuggling of the Syrian oil, we're not going to allow it. And that happened. And they got the message clearly. Mm-hmm. So that, and there is some clashes happening every once in a while. Today, just this morning, the Russian military police came in Raqqa for the first time. The Syrian army is spreading also in new villages and highways. The Russians and the Turkish are on highways and in villages, but every once in a while there's a car bomb, and who's doing these car bombs are the terrorists who are funded, supported by Turkey.
But you know, I'm really glad to hear your detailed account of this, because actually, while, as you say, there's occasional car bomb or act of terrorists, which is a terrible instance, but it actually, the overall violence and certainly armed violence between parties is reduced by your account. Is that right?
In northeast Syria, but there is still battles in the west Aleppo province and Idlib province. There is still problems. The Syrian army and the Russian air force are bombing the terrorists in Idlib. And in northeast Latakia, they are bombing them, bombing their headquarters, bombing their weapons storages and all of that. And we all know in the Idlib province, they are the terrorists, the Uyghur terrorists. That's a long story about the Uyghurs. That's in Syria.
Well, I'm glad you... Let me take you up on that, because I'm going to be speaking later about this matter of the Uyghur, because here there is now a new phenomenon of Canadian U.S. governments passing resolutions and wringing their hands about the autonomous Uyghur area of China. It isn't widely known that there is a movement called the East Turkestan Independence Movement, and they are an armed group, and they take credit for acts of terror inside China. Now, but also fighters from East, what they call East Turkestan, which is China, have been passing through Turkey into Syria. And I believe you have told us that there might be as many as 20,000 of them. Is that right?
And who brought them from the beginning and from the first day is the Turkish government, another Turkish government. Let's be particularly Erdogan.
Is it the same group? Or do they have different names? The one that operates, it is a criminal organization. The United Nations, by the way, called them a terrorist organization, and it's the East Turkestan Independence Movement. Are they the same people as the ones going into Syria?
Yes, they are the same people. They are the same group. They're brought from China to Turkey. They're supported and funded and helped by the Americans. They get American support. And we saw just a few days ago where the American Congress came out and supported them and supported the Uyghurs, where the Syrian Foreign Ministry did a statement and condemned what the American Congress did, and they said those people are terrorists, and they did terrorist attacks in Syria, and also they do terrorist attacks inside of China and killed several big numbers of innocent people, just like how the PKK did the several terrorist attacks that killed enormous number of citizens, just like ISIS, all of them, all of these movements. But the Americans today, they are fighting the big war is, and we can call it the Cold War of the 21st century. It's between China and the United States, and it's escalating, and it's in the highest levels ever between Beijing and Washington. They're doing all kinds of trade war, political war, and even on the ground, but not them by themselves, by other, by, as I say, the people who work for the United States and China.
You know, it is very important to address the matter the way you've been doing it, and also to call attention to the fact that we had the 9/11 attack on the buildings in the United States, great loss of life, and that set in place an initiative, which was an international initiative, where all the states agreed that they had to coordinate with each other in a common struggle against terrorism, against groups that attack civilians and use terror, that is, the destruction of civilians, as a political weapon. Now, but it hasn't been an international effort. Instead, the U.S. has been aiding and abetting terrorist groups and looking the other way when Syria defends itself. Actually, all parties. I mean, Turkey certainly has an argument in terms of terror used against them. We see it as happened in northern Iraq. But isn't that what's really shouldn't they convene a new international meeting and say, are we all in this fight together, or is somebody going to, like the U.S. and France and Britain, are they going to cheat and try to create havoc in other countries?
First of all, in the year to the sad events of 9/11, who said they did it was Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was made and funded and supported by the United States Secret Service. We all know that. That's no information. You can find that information on Google. Mm. Bin Laden was an American employee for the American Secret Service. He did the... And also WikiLeaks came out and said that the Americans knew about 9/11. Mm-hmm. The Americans, and even some information came out on the news that they knew about it and they even planned it
I know that's a school of thought on this, but certainly it's also undisputed that the Saudis were protected. I don't know if it's still true that they do not include the names of Saudi personnel who were in the United States, who departed the United States. When they made the big report on it, my memory is that it was heavily edited. And as a matter of fact, Donald Trump, while running for president, said he was going to unredact it. He was going to let us see the whole story. But it remains redacted, doesn't it?
Yeah, because they paid him. They paid Trump. Didn't he go to...
You've just written an article. People should go to... This is Stephen Sehuni, chief editor of the Mideast Discourse.com. You've just written a piece about this Pensacola, Florida matter, which for Americans really ought to... It's becoming kind of an echo. The closest friends... Saudi Air Force people being trained in Pensacola, Florida, and one of them turns and kills American naval personnel. And it has an echo of those young men who were Saudis. They were the majority of the people who carried out the acts of 9/11. And people don't want to add one and one to see if they might get two.
Yeah, they don't want. And if we... It's about 3,000 innocent people died in 2000 in 9/11, and that America used that to do all of the wars since 9/11 all the way till today. How many innocent people died because of 9/11 in the Middle East, starting from Afghanistan to Iraq to Syria to Libya to Yemen? Millions. Mm-hmm. The American used 9/11, God bless the souls of the 3,000 people, but there's about millions in the Middle East died because of that cause that the Americans did in 9/11, and they knew about it, and they did not prevent it because they used it for their own cause, and yes. Bush did that to invade all the Middle East. But yes. What you said about if the world wanted to meet...
Yes, wasn't it Paul Wolfowitz or I forget the other guy's name, but anyway, Wolfowitz, we'll give him the honor, who said, "Never let a crisis go to waste."
If we're going to talk about the masters of war in the Bush administration, we're talking about Colin Powell, we're talking about Dick Cheney, we're talking about
Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld, all of those people, they're all of the blood of the millions are on their hand.
Yes.
But the problem is the Security Council and the United Nations, they cannot do anything because they are under hostage by the United States. How many times did the Security Council and the United Nations go in and meet to condemn the Israeli occupation acts and murders against the Lebanese and against the Palestinians, and every time the Americans veto and they cannot do one thing to protect the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. That's one reason. The same thing with Syria, the same thing with Iraq, the same thing with Libya, the same thing with Yemen. So you cannot depend on the Security Council until that one side, and until the Americans stop being the bully of the world and stop being the police of the world. That's the problem.
Exactly. Well, that's a great note to close on. Stephen Sehuni, Syrian-American journalist, chief editor of MideastDiscourse.com. It's always great to talk to you. We believe in going to Syria to get our news from a good journalist, and we thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. Taylor Report, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back to talk about other matters.